preventing and reversing diabetes naturally. And with that, depression and heart disease and high blood pressure and obesity and overweight, helping the whole person by some of the most gifted and insightful and successful medical doctor practitioners there are. Give a call now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and get for $100, that's all, 3.5 hours of preventing and reversing, you heard me right, you heard it, reversing diabetes naturally. Thank you all very much. We look forward to sharing more tomorrow.
Have a nice day, everyone. Thank you. And you are tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org on the web. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's for young Nico. My name is Michael G. Haskins. I'm the station's chief announcer and your host and radio guide. And coming up straight away is Living for the City. Haciendo la más bonita a mi caribeña tierra, haciendo la más bonita a mi caribeña tierra, y la barca viene, la barca va, mi caribeña primera, la luna brilla en la mar.
A boy is born in hot damn Mississippi. To keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours.
And welcome to Living for the City over WBAI in New York, listener sponsored, commercial free. Radio at 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Living for the City is a program focusing on telling stories, our histories, our perspectives of local communities throughout our area and beyond. If you have lived in New York City for any length of time, you know how difficult it is to get the media, sometimes the major media particularly, to report about a subject in depth, tell the truth, or even cover an issue. We examine those very issues, especially dealing with the real estate industry and the very powerful lobbyists. We look at housing, land, air, and water use, including sunlight, and we do so truthfully, accurately, and without any conflicts of interest. My name is Michael G. Haskins. I'm the program host and executive producer, and the senior producer is Jillian Jonas. But before I go further and introduce my guest, I want to familiarize you to the concept of Sankofa. Sankofa is a word in the Akan Twi and Fante languages of Ghana that translates to retrieve, literally go back and get. And just like the Sankofa bird that is looking back over its shoulder to see where it has come from, we look back in history to see where we've come from, to better understand how we exist in this current moment and help us chart a course for the future. It is key that we do that. I tell my children that all the time. Chart a course for the future. And on this day in peace and social justice history, September 1st, 1939, Nazi Germany invaded Poland, overwhelming the Polish army with 58 German divisions and air cover from the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe. This action started the Second World War, prompting England and France to declare war on Germany 2 days later. Also on this day in history, September 1st, 1945, the Emperor of Japan surrendered unconditionally to the U.S. and its allies in a ceremony on the deck of the battleship USS Missouri, ending the Second World War. I have some other, as always. Today actually is a very, very busy day in history, but I have a guest standing by and I don't want to delay. I want to jump right in to our very interesting conversation today. So I'm going to hold off on these issues right now and get to that a little bit later. In fact, I'm going to open up the phones maybe around 20 minutes to the hour, 20 minutes to 12, and take some phone calls. I just came back from a vacation. I was out of town. I was down south, and I had some experiences, and I want you, the listening audience, to help me sort through it. I had some feelings about part of my vacation experience, and I'm looking for some help from some of you. Some of you, maybe you can help me analyze what I'm feeling about my time away. Nothing critical or crucial or bad in any way, but I'm trying to sort through it, so maybe you can help. I want to share that with you, but that's going to be a little bit later. The last time this guest appeared on Living for the City, the country was reeling from the Trump administration's war against the country's poor. Well, now we have a new, somewhat more sympathetic federal government, but we're also following unforeseen and continuing hardships like the COVID pandemic. Associate Director of the New Economy Project, NEP, Andy Morrison, is here to catch us up on some of their incredibly important work democratizing institutions like banking and keeping predatory lenders out of the state, which could really help low-income New Yorkers. But speaking of predatory lending, Andy is also here to discuss some very disturbing issues that developed during the pandemic and the role New York City government has played in that. Andy, welcome back to Living for the City, and glad to have you back with us.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on.
Andy, this I found in some of the reading that I've been doing over the past week or more while I was away about banks and how banks really, and I think this is the appropriate word, mauled New Yorkers with $1.7 billion in predatory fees during the pandemic. Now, the predatory fees, debt collection. Andy, I want you to help us understand what they did, what happened, and what we were going through as we were trying to survive, literally stay alive, couldn't go on the subways, couldn't go into stores. We were homebound, many of us. What was going on? Beside what I just said, what was going on in the banks? What happened? What did they do?
Yeah, so at New Economy Project, we did some research not too long ago, taking a look at just how much money in fees banks were extracting from New Yorkers since the beginning of the pandemic. And this was, an estimate that's never been done before in the state, because the banks, they're only required to report the fees that they charge at the national level. But we were able to extrapolate and estimate the amount of money that they hit New Yorkers with. And as you said, we found that that banks extracted $1.7 billion just since March of 2020. So throughout the pandemic, they continued to take massive amounts of money out of communities, and particularly hit their low income, their lowest income customers, people of color, immigrants who have accounts with the banks, bore the brunt of this massive extraction. And the you know, maybe one of the worst sort of aspects of this is during the pandemic, the federal regulators actually let the banks themselves off the hook in terms of the types of fees that, you know, they had to pay.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, they turned around and didn't give any leeway to folks who were struggling in the pandemic.
Yeah, so there was no federal oversight into this? Did they just turned and looked the other way?
Yeah, well, the banks, you know, they charge one of the worst fees that we've seen is the overdraft fee, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And what studies have shown is that these overdraft fees primarily are charged to the lowest income customers. So just 9% of the bank's customers pay 84% of those fees, which makes sense because it's the folks who are struggling to get from paycheck to paycheck and their accounts, you know, hit the limit, and then the banks tack on these massive fees, sometimes on a daily basis. They just keep hitting them with more and more fees. And then it pushes people out. Not only does it take their money, but it pushes people out of the mainstream banking system and often into the clutches of predatory financial services.
Mm-hmm. Check cashing places and so on.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. So what we've been doing at New Economy Project is underscoring how not only do these banks, you know, extract money from folks struggling during, you know, the worst public health crisis of our lifetimes, not only do they finance fossil fuels, not only do they fund some of the worst landlords who evict large numbers of New York City tenants, but, you know, the list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the banks actually hold New York City deposits as well. So just like, you know, folks who have a checking account with maybe a J.P. Morgan Chase or something, the city of New York has a bank account to pay for public services and pay its bills, and that's where the city holds its money.
Mm.
And so we've said to the city, why are we putting our public money in banks that are harming particularly black and brown neighborhoods? Either they're not serving them, they're redlining them systematically, or when they are serving them, they're extracting huge amounts of fees, pushing them out of the banking system. And why do we want our money in those banks? There's got to be a better way. And so that's why we've been really focusing on public banking, talking about the way a public bank, which I'd love to talk more about today, could not only help the city divest from these banks that are harming and exploiting New Yorkers, but could help to invest in our communities.
No, we're definitely going to talk about public banking in just a moment, and I'm so happy that you're here to talk about that. I've known of public banking, but not in depth. I know that I've gotten some information over the past 5 or 6 years or so with a colleague here at the radio station, Professor Richard Wolf. But you're here and you're going to tell us more about it and the relationship and what we can do, how it can help all of us here in New York. But before we get there, Andy, what are some of the more, the most, I should say, egregious offenders with this predatory fees for that New York has had to undergo during this pandemic?
Yeah, so the worst offender was in New York was certainly J.P. Morgan Chase, which extracted. Now this is just J.P. Morgan Chase extracted nearly $1 billion in fees from New York City account holders,
Wow.
And that includes almost $600 million in those predatory overdraft fees. And so, yeah, we found that, you know, by and large, it was the big banks that were charging people the most fees. And so four of the largest banks had charged about 80% of the fees in New York. But Chase was, the worst of the worst.
Leading the pack. So I'm speaking with Andy Morrison, Associate Director of the New Economy Project, and this is Living for the City. Let's talk a little bit about the city. The city renewed its contract with Wells Fargo. Tell us about that, and why is it so outrageous and so alarming?
Yeah, so several years ago, in the aftermath of the fraudulent account scandal, where Wells Fargo's executives were pressuring their employees to open up accounts, and so under this massive amount of pressure from the top, the employees were setting up fraudulent accounts without their customers' knowledge. So, you know, that was just one in a string of kind of dirty deeds that that Wells Fargo has been involved with over the years. And at that same time, a lot of activists were putting pressure on the city to divest its public deposits from Wells Fargo on the basis that the bank is funding pipelines, violating indigenous rights, and that continues to this day. It's one of the worst financiers of fracked gas pipelines on Earth. And so the city had, under that pressure, the city had given Wells Fargo a conditional designation, which meant it was going to draw down its hundreds of millions of dollars on deposit with the bank. Now, they used, you know, some the rationale that that Wells Fargo had its Community Reinvestment Act rating downgraded. So that was sort of the legal reason that the city was able to get rid of its accounts with Wells Fargo. Since then, Wells Fargo has managed to get a better rating, and so the city has now gotten back into business. But it's really just it just really goes to show how kind of handcuffed the city is and how much power the Wall Street banks have over our public policies, that the city would get back into business with a bank like Wells Fargo. And we've sort of said time and time again at New Economy Project, how bad does a bank really have to be before there are significant consequences? Because the fact is, you know, the city has $90-plus billion in revenue that comes through. The vast majority of that flows through these banks, and they make hefty profits from it. And so why do we want a bank like Wells Fargo holding our public dollars, particularly when Wells Fargo doesn't even serve communities around the city? It has only one bank branch outside of Manhattan in New York City.
Say that again, Andy. I want people to hear that.
Yeah, Wells Fargo, they only have one bank branch outside of Manhattan. All their bank branches are in Manhattan. And, you know, that's an issue that all the big banks are guilty of, not serving communities of color. And we've done research showing that for every three and a quarter banks in predominantly white communities, there's only one bank branch in communities of color around the city. And Wells Fargo is, you know, a poster child for that among many, many other really harmful activities. Mm-hmm. So why on earth would we want our public money in a bank that is not even serving immigrant communities, black, brown communities, and other low-income communities around the city?
Andy, it's a natural lead-in to our next discussion. There's the ongoing fight for public banking. We see some really exciting opportunities with the new city government next year. Racial and economic justice. I don't know, part of the New Economy Project's mission is to build a new economy that works for all, based upon the principles of cooperation, democracy, racial justice, and ecological sustainability. Now, public banking in New York City This campaign is rooted in economic and racial justice. I don't know if that's an oxymoronic statement or is just in my head, but walk us through public banking and what are you trying to accomplish here? What is your mission?
All right, so this is such an exciting campaign, and we see, I think we would agree that there's really great momentum and excellent prospects as the new city government comes in next year. So what a public bank is just unlike, you know, a private commercial bank that is serving its shareholders and, you know, increasingly its corporate executives' mm-hmm. interests. A public bank would have a public purpose, and its mission would be to serve the public good. And so what we envision is that the city of New York, as I said, billions and billions of dollars right now are held on deposit as the city takes in revenue and then has to make expenditures. That money has to go somewhere. So it's sitting in, actually, J.P. Morgan Chase is the bank that holds more deposits than any other in New York City. And so instead of having that money in banks like Chase, we can create our own public institution, be created by the city, be accountable to the people of New York, and that bank could hold our deposits, and then that's a massive amount of money. We're New York City. So if we can leverage those deposits and target investments in historically redlined neighborhoods, black and brown and immigrant communities that the banks have either, you know, left behind or systematically exploited, or both. And so the public bank could target its investments to grow New York City's emerging cooperative and community-led, you know, development initiatives such as worker co-ops, deeply affordable housing, community land trusts, community-controlled renewable energy, and much, much more. So we think it's pivotal at this moment as we're continuing through this pandemic and we need to see a just recovery. We think a public bank can play a huge role in that fight.
Mm. And how would that affect the, because I'm going to ask you before you leave, you know, what can listeners do? How can they get involved if they're interested in that? But not just yet. But what is it that the person that works like myself, like yourself, what can they do? How is this going to be beneficial to the individual?
Yeah, great question. So there's a lot of ways, you know, we think that a public bank could serve the needs of communities around, people and communities around the city. Mm-hmm. One of the things that a public bank would do fundamentally is partner with small community development financial institutions. And there are some, you know, there's many around the city. For example, the Lower East Side People's Federal Credit Union, Brooklyn Cooperative Federal Credit Union, Neighborhood Trust Federal Credit Union uptown in Manhattan. And these actually institutions are part of the Public Bank NYC Coalition, which New Economy Project coordinates along with many labor, worker cooperatives, and other social justice groups, community-based organizations around the city. And the reason these financial institutions are so invested and leading the way on this campaign is because they see in a public bank a potential for the city to have an institution that could partner with them to expand and strengthen the work that they do. These are mission-driven community development financial institutions that have a long track record of serving black, brown, and immigrant communities around the city responsibly. And so they not only provide, you know, the kind of financial services that people want, from checking accounts to loans and so forth, but they also invest in local community needs like affordable housing. And so what a public bank would do would be to shore those up, and we could see more of them around the city, and the ones that we have could be doing more work to serve communities.
Mm. Well, Andy, you mentioned, and I'm speaking with, again, Andy Morrison, Associate Director of the New Economy Project here on WBAI's Living for the City. You mentioned just a moment ago, Community Land Trust. Talk about that in general. And there was just a recent victory, New York City victory. Can you talk about the that issue for us?
Sure, yeah. So Community Land Trust is basically a nonprofit that would own the land, you know, on behalf of a community, and ensure that the land is used in ways that benefit the community. So communities that are, you know, experiencing displacement and gentrification and speculation, they can come together, form a CLT, and it's governed by the community members, and then they can ensure that there's going to be community-driven planning, and that that they can ensure that the way the land is developed is going to meet the immediate and long-term needs of the community. So it's a incredibly important model, particularly now as we're seeing, you know, today I think the New York State Legislature is going to reconvene to extend the and fix some of the problems with the eviction moratorium now. But CLTs present kind of an alternative to our really speculative, profit-driven real estate model in New York City. And so recently, through support from the city, the CLT movement has grown leaps and bounds. Went from having one CLT on the Lower East Side, the Cooper Square CLT, to now there's 14-plus CLTs with organizers on the ground. And it's really exciting time for the movement. And that's been thanks in part to some of the funding that activists and community groups won from the city. And now CLTs, you know, want to continue to grow and kind of seize the momentum. And so fighting for more policy changes that would give CLTs a preference for public land and private land so that it can continue to take root in more and more communities around the city.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're just running out of time, but I want to ask you just before we get some concluding comments from you. Today is September 1st. We still have an election to go through. There is not, we don't have a new administration yet, although it looks like it's heading in one direction, but we still have to go through the beginning of November. Have you, have the folks at New Economy Project, have you been in contact in any way with Eric Adams or any of his folks to talk about some of these things that we've been talking about today?
Yeah, we're actually we've been looking forward to meeting with the Democratic elect because we see tremendous opportunity, as I said before, to move public banking forward in a big way next year. So, yeah, we haven't met with him yet, but we are eager to do so. And I will add that many, many folks who won their primaries were strong and vocal supporters on their campaigns of both public banking and CLTs. So, yeah, so that's something we're looking forward to. And I will also add that we're also going to be active in the state legislative session next year to pass the New York Public Banking Act, which would really create a framework in New York State for public, for local public banks, and really ensure that the kind of public banks that we create reflect the vision of racial and economic justice.
Well, excellent, Andy. And when you do, make sure, don't forget about us. You have a place here, a voice here. We want to hear back from you in the future, not too distant future, about these issues as the election is decided and things go forward. We want you from New Economy Project to talk about things going forward as we look toward the new administration, whatever it's going to be, and the new year ahead. Andy Morrison, let's give some contact information for the organization, and what can people do? How can they become involved in this?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So please go to our website. It's neweconomynyc.org. You can sign up. You can check out some action alerts. There are ways to support the New York Public Banking Act, for example. Call your legislator. Let them know that this issue matters to you. And then the other thing folks should know is, in addition to the campaign work we do and so much more, we also run a free legal services hotline for low-income New York City residents for anyone who's dealing with financial justice matters. So if you're being hounded by a debt collector, or you know, were charged an unfair fee from your bank or a predatory lender, you can contact our hotline and we can help. So I'll give that number. It's 212-925-4929. Again, 212-925-4929. And again, that's for low income New York City residents. It's a free service, and please give the hotline a call if you're dealing with any kind of financial injustice and you want to fight back.
Andy Morrison, thank you so much for being on, giving us this information about public banking and more. And as I said, you are welcome back, and we look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Okay. Andy Morrison, Associate Director of the New Economy Project. I have so much to do, so many duties to perform here. This is Living for the City over WBAI in New York.
New Orleans.
Si.
It was a sad day in America. Also was a bleak day in New Orleans. Hurricane, Katrina. Waters and winds of pain. Hurricane, Katrina. Waters of death and destruction. We know World Trade Center. We know what happened. So it was a sad day in America. Also was a bleak day in New Orleans. Hurricane, Katrina. Waters and winds of pain.
Hurricane Katrina, 2005. Hurricane Ida, 16 years to the day. To the day. August 29th. Goodness. And that's the Durban Drifters. The Durban Drifters. And this is WBAI's Living for the City at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. We have some new programming coming up next week, and I'll let you know more about that as I'm able to digest. Can't do that right now. But I want to thank you all for tuning in. This is a commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station. That's right. That's why we're able to talk about the issues that we do. You heard the program earlier in the day, Bonnie Faulkner's Guns and Butter. Guns and Butter. There's another program, a relatively new program, called Radical Mom. Radical Mom, Juliana Furlano. She wasn't on this week, but she precedes me 10 a.m. on Wednesday. So there's so much happening. There is excitement here. We're trying to build upon our station. We've been around for 61 years. 61 years commercially free in the center of the FM dial in the largest media market in the world. That's right. We're the largest media market in the world, and we have a commercial free station that is 24 hours, and it is ours. How you can help support this station, it's very simple. You can call our pledge line. It's always open. And that number is 212-209-2950. And say, I want to become a member of the station, or I just want to make a donation. I want to support Living for the City, or I want to support Name Your Program. But since you're listening right now, I'm sure you'll want to say that I want to support Living for the City. And you'll make a donation of $25, $50, or whatever is comfortable for you. But just making that call, that contribution, that commitment to us here makes all the difference. And that's how we have continued operations for 61 years, if you can believe that. We're looking for some people to do some pro bono work for us. That's always part of it, to do some grant writing for us. And we're asking you to reach out to our general manager, Berthold Reimers, if you have some expertise in this area. His email address is Berthold, B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D. Let me do that again. Slow down a moment, Mike. B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D at WBAI.org. If you have any expertise in grant writing and you're willing to do some pro bono work for us, we would love for you to contact. And as I said, you can become a member of the station for as little as $25. You can become a major donor if you want. That's somebody making a contribution of $500 or $1,000. And I know that's, you know, like an outrageous amount of money to ask, but it's not necessarily an ask. If that is comfortable for you, that's what I always say. If you can do that to support this station, it's not going in my pocket. You know what I mean? It's going to support the entirety of the station. So give a call now, 212-209-2950. Right after this, I'm going to share part of my experience down south over the past, it wasn't quite 2 weeks. Wish it was 2 weeks, but it wasn't quite 2 weeks. And how I'm feeling about it. So stay tuned. Be right back.
A German folktale of the Pied Piper speaks of a man hired by the town to lure rats away. This man, dressed in multicolored coat, plays his flute and draws the rats in with magic. The piper is a hero of the people until they decide not to pay. A year later, he returns to the German town and uses his music to lure away the children instead. R. Kelly marries Aaliyah at the age of 15, and we sing along to Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. We find out that Aaliyah met R. Kelly at the age of 12, and somehow our opinions of him stay on the upbeat. The children's choir learns the lyrics to I Believe I Can Fly, and a flute plays somewhere in R. Kelly's home. R. Kelly calls himself the Pied Piper of R&B, and we make the excuse before we make the connection. After the first allegation, we thought, it takes at least two notes to strike a chord. After the second allegation, we gave him 3 Grammys. After the third and fourth allegations, we ignored them simply because we just really liked the songs. And all we can think about is the next family reunion. And who better to sing for our electric slide? And how else will we step in the name of love? See, a rap sheet these days isn't worth the price of the playlist at the cookout. In the German folktale, the piper lures the children away while all the adults are distracted in church, most likely singing. R. Kelly tells us he is devoting his life to the Lord, and an angel drowns out the video footage. R. Kelly hands us a hit we give him back forgiveness. He hands us a 19-minute song, and the melody makes us forget the definition of a predator, makes us forget all the little girls of color that he wrote those songs for in the first place. And again, no one speaks up when black girls are abused. Like, the better the song, the more invisible black girls become. But this time, we know exactly where the cult is in the city of Atlanta, and still the town prefers the Piper's music, almost as if entertainment is more important than the allegations, almost as if all their voices together isn't the right type of choir. And again, rape and misogyny is just another part of the culture, tightly woven into harmony. And again, we learn that music is the best distraction and the worst black magic. We have taught our girls that they are everything short of a symphony. Tell me, is the music really that special when one man's voice can sing over them all? When we can hold a note but can't hold a man accountable? When the piper is realer than any folk tale we know, and we surrender their bodies to pay the price?
Well, that's one of the things that I have been doing over the summer. My lovely, my oldest grandchild had introduced us when he came over one, we hadn't seen him in a year because of his bloody COVID blast. So all of a sudden I found I'm into TikTok. I know. But there are, you know, some interesting things that the young people are doing now. And yes, they're caught up in all of that. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about. So I like fishing. I really like fishing. Some of my fondest memories with my father were going fishing with him. And I'm pretty sure there are many of you that have the same feeling or same memories. But I really do like to go. But, you know, when you get grown and get older and, yes, get into grandfather age, you don't get to go as much as you like. You're working and you have responsibilities, so you don't get a chance to go as much as you'd like. Well, I got a chance to go over the past week and a half, and I so enjoyed it. My father-in-law, we went fishing together. He wasn't having any luck, but all of a sudden I started having some luck. And here's the problem. I was enjoying the fishing, but all of a sudden I had this feeling. Now, my wife is always telling me, she says, why do you fish? Oh, so you're going to murder the fish? I said, babe, come on, give me a break here. I love fishing. I love to go fishing. I'm not going out there to murder the fish. It's catch and release, but still the fish feel okay. I hear it, but I don't hear it. You know what I mean? I want to go fishing. It's something about fishing. And you fishermen listening, you know what I'm talking about. It's something about that. But this time, I'm out there fishing, and I catch the first fish. And it's, you know, feels like it always feels. And I'm excited, and I catch the fish. I'm having a little struggle releasing him because, you know, you have to be very careful, because if you're not, the fish is struggling. Here's the thing. The fish is struggling for their life. That's what's happening. You have them on this hook. He's injured because they got this hook in their jaw and they're trying to get away. So I'm trying to, as quickly as I can, to dislodge this hook without really hurting the fish. I'm not going to eat the fish. So why are you doing it in the first place? Don't ask me that question, please. So I get the hook out, but it's a little damaged. And so it's making me feel a little bad. So I let the fish go. cast it out there, put another shrimp on there, throw it out there again, catch another fish. Oh my goodness, this is looking pretty good. When I get the fish, and this is a pretty, you know, sizable fish. We were fishing on the shore. It's about, let me see here, not a fish story, about a foot long. When I pull him out, the fish is bloody already. Oh, God. So, you know, I'm feeling some kind of way already, and now the fish is really injured. So I let the fish go. I go one more time. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm actively thinking about what I'm doing. I catch a skate, and, you know, it's, let me describe it. It's a kind of a ray. It's not a stingray, but it's a ray. So I get the fish up, I get the ray up, and I'm trying to dislodge it, but I can actually hear, and I'm sorry, maybe this is too much information, maybe I shouldn't even be talking about this, but I can hear this ray gasping for breath. And it was just too much. I said, you know, I went back and told my wife, and she said, well, good, maybe you'll stop going out there fishing again. I don't know. I still like fishing, but that experience bothered me. So that's why I'm asking for your help. Maybe you can help me work through my feelings. And the number is 212-209-2877. You know, I'm definitely stepping outside of my comfort zone with this. It's not something that I usually do or talk about a whole lot of personal experiences. Well, that's not really true. I talk about my father and my relationship with him and share recordings with him all of the time. But I'd like to, you know, maybe you have some just recollections of fishing with your father, your uncle, or your aunt, for that matter. I'll take some phone calls for the remainder of the show. I'm looking for my newscast. Where are you, Chris? 212-209-2877. A lot going on Living for the City today. 212-209-2877.
I'm keeping my mask on forever and ever and ever. And yes, I got the vaccine. You people are dirty and nasty, and y'all don't wash your hands. Keep your distance. Stay 6 feet away from me.
Okay. Let's take a couple of phone calls here. WBAI, this is Living for the City. I'm Michael G. Haskins. Good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Terry from Queens.
Hey, Terry.
All right, so talking about the fishing,
you
release some memories.
Mm.
My father also took me fishing from the youngest age.
Mm-hmm.
And we caught everything. This was back when New York was alive with every kind of fish you could imagine.
Right.
We got blowfish,
Blowfish, oh my goodness, yes. Go ahead, Terry, go ahead.
Big blowfish.
Yeah.
Big blowfish, 10, 12 inches long.
Wow, I've never seen one that long, but go ahead, Terry.
Oh, believe me, back in the 60s.
Mm.
So we, between us, my father and I, caught thousands of fish, every species. And there were many, many thousands of the smaller bait fish, the spearing and the killies. We would catch them by the hundreds or the thousands. Anyway, I raised my son, also fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Same way. He's an adult now. I'm retired.
Right.
Last time I went fishing was about 5 years ago.
Okay.
The Shinnecock Canal, if you know where that is.
I heard of it.
Yeah, Eastern Long Island. I caught a sea robin, the first fish I caught.
Yes, sea robin. Yeah, people don't know that, but I do. Go ahead.
Right. So I threw him in the bucket. You don't put water in the bucket because it just prolongs the agony. And there I was fishing, and I said something to the fish. I said, I'm sorry. And he was sitting there gasping, just like that fish that he was talking
about. The skate, yeah.
The skate, right? Oh, yeah. God. They got a face like a human being.
Yes, oh, my God. Terry, you're killing me, man. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So anyway, what happened was...
He had little teeth, and you could hear him gasping for... go ahead, Terry.
Okay, no. I understand, because the sea robin is even louder. Mm. They're related to the croaker, which really makes that...
Croaker. Yep, that's right.
The sea robin is related to that. And he was gasping so loud. Mm. I picked him up. I put him back in the canal. Mm. This is true. I haven't been fishing since. I just don't want to kill any more fish.
Yeah.
I've killed too many, way over my limit.
Mm.
You know, okay. I'm a fish eater, but, figure they're raised that way.
Right.
They're raised to be eaten.
Terry,
so that's my first story.
I so appreciate that. I have five calls. I'm not going to be able to take them all, but thank you so much, Terry. You helped tremendously. You don't know. Thank you for calling.
And you're helping other people, too. You get out of this habit of killing animals.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thanks, Terry. Okay, this is Living for the City. Wow, just a couple of minutes left. I have the newscast that's coming up. Gary Null Show follows. You're on the air. Good morning. This is Living for the City. Go ahead, please.
Is this me?
Yep, it's you.
Hi, I'm Joel. It really touched me when you said that, because from the time I was a little kid, my father loved fishing. It was his only hobby. We were in Ohio. We used to fish on the Ohio River. I felt bad for the worm. I just was a very sensitive child, and I just had a hard time with seeing the gasping, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been a hypocrite, you know. I've always been glad to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been a matter of me making that less than pure choice that I'll be glad to have someone else kill the food that I eat, but I have a hard time doing it myself, and I'd never say to anyone anything different. I am truly a hypocrite, but I can live with myself. People get a lot of relaxation from fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, to this day, now I have a nephew who loves it. And, you know, I'm not disgusted by it, and I would like to hang out with him and do it, but seeing that sucker for breath.
Yeah.
Always got me from the time I was a little kid.
Yeah. Well,
so I hear you. Now, okay. I've never heard anyone tell that story.
Mm.
When I heard you say it, it really resounded with me.
Yeah. What's your first name?
Joel.
Okay, Joel. All right, listen, let me take this last call because I only have 2 minutes. Joel, thank you so much. Okay.
And you are not a monster.
Okay, thanks, Joel. This is Living for the City. Let me see. Are you there, Joel and Terry? Are you there, WBAI? Oh, come on. Maybe I waited too long. All right, let me try you. WBAI, we have like 2 minutes left. Are you there? Hello? Sometimes this happens, you know. I try to line things up. I'm doing the best I can. Are you on the air? No. See, what happens sometimes is people get tired of holding on. But I did hear from Terry and Joel, and that was great hearing them tell those stories. And that was my story in part over my vacation. I love to go fishing. Some of my fondest memories were with my father, but this somehow, and Terry said, you know, he said the fish and the face on the skate is a flat fish, you know, like a flounder, but the face is underneath, right? So it's a dark, its back is dark, but the bottom, I don't know, it's his stomach area, you would call it, is white, and but he has face right there and his little teeth. It's not sharp like little shark teeth. It's like buck teeth almost. Oh, my goodness. That just messed me up for the rest of that day, and I went home and talked to my wife about it. She said, good, then I hope you'll stop fishing. I don't know. Maybe I will. It bothered me a great deal, and I am sorry about that. But I'm glad to have been able to talk to all of you on Living for the City here today over WBAI, listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. And we're in the center of the dial in New York City, and standing by is our newscast, and that's upcoming.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, September 1st. Here are some headlines. Texas lawmakers gave final approval Tuesday to a bill that would impose new restrictions on voting and discriminate against voters of color and disabled voters. It now goes to the desk of Republican Governor Greg Abbott, who said in a statement he will sign it into law. The bill restricts the hours counties can offer early voting and places new rules around mail-in voting. It sets new limits on those who can help voters cast their ballots, including those with disabilities. More than 50 Democrats fled Austin in early July in an effort to prevent the necessary quorum needed to vote on the bill. Democrats in Texas now say the only way to halt Republican laws that restrict voting access is for Congress to pass federal voting rights protections, which remain stalled on Capitol Hill. A law that bans abortions after 6 weeks went into effect in Texas today. There is no exception for rape or incest, although there is an exemption for medical emergencies. Several abortion rights groups this week asked the Supreme Court to temporarily block the ban, but the court did not act by the 1 a.m. deadline for the law to take effect. The new law deputizes private citizens to actively seek out and sue anyone who helps a woman obtain an abortion, including those who give a woman a ride to a clinic or provide financial assistance in obtaining an abortion. Abortion rights advocates say the new law will prevent 85% of Texas women from accessing abortion care, as most are not aware they are pregnant as early as 6 weeks. If the federal courts ultimately allow the law to stand, it is likely that other conservative states will move to pass similar laws. The U.S. Forest Service is closing every national forest in California, citing the extraordinary risk of wildfires and forecasts that show that the threat will only remain high and even get worse. The closures started Tuesday night and run through September 17th, but could be extended. More than 6,800 wildfires have already burned 1.7 million acres of national forest land across California, the Forest Service said, posing a dire threat to people, wildlife, and property. Meanwhile, the massive Caldor Fire grew by more than 5,000 acres overnight, prompting evacuations from South Lake Tahoe, California. More than 53,000 people have been evacuated so far because of the fire. Louisiana authorities on Tuesday urged people who evacuated ahead of Hurricane Ida to hold off on returning home, as more than a million people remain without power. Officials say in some areas, power will be out for up to a month. Schools are closed indefinitely, cell service is spotty, and hospitals, already burdened by COVID-19, are relying on generators and water reserves since water and sewer outages are widespread. The National Weather Service issued a heat advisory for southeast Louisiana and southern Mississippi until 5 p.m. today. That means some residents who stayed and rode out the storm will face heat indices of 105 to 107 degrees without air conditioning. Heat is the number one weather-related cause of fatalities in the U.S., the Weather Service said. New Orleans is opening cooling centers where people can escape the heat and have access to water, food, air conditioning, and charging devices. And in weather today, in Washington, D.C., it is 78 degrees and cloudy. In New York City, 71 with some showers. From WPFW in